You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This is Billy Bragg with the Milkman of Human Kindness from Life's a Riot with Spy vs. Spy. It was unexpectedly cathartic to sing this along with a room full of people at the power station on Sunday night. It's been a long time coming, Billy Bragg returning to Aotearoa. He was supposed to be here pre-pandemic, and then we know what happened after that. But he's made good on some promises to return to New Zealand and play a string of shows in Wellington, celebrating different facets of his musical career. And then he came to Tamaki Makaurau and to Christchurch as well and did an overview show of music from across his entire career. Billy has always been a trade union activist, a tireless fighter in the greater cause for solidarity, struggles across many different spaces, both social and political. And we're going to have a listen to a chat that I was lucky enough to have with him on Friday afternoon about some of those things right now. You're on 95BFM Breakfast. There's a lot I want to talk about, but I think let's start with why you're in New Zealand. You're making good on a promise to do a show or a series of shows in Wellington that have been knocked around by the pandemic, and you're also touring, I guess, your whole catalogue, really, in many ways, for us here up in Auckland and those down in Christchurch. How does it feel to be stretching your musical legs again around the world, given the strangeness we've all been experiencing?
It's great, actually, to be coming to do these shows, because I was on the very cusp of coming to New Zealand when the plug was pulled dramatically in 2020 by the pandemic. So although since then I've recorded an album, done an album too in the UK and in the United States of America, the fact that I wasn't able to get to New Zealand and Australia has been in the back of my mind all this time. So finally, I've been able to come down here. And it's really great to get back and be able to play these shows.
The shows you've been doing in Wellington, it's a very special thing to get to essentially do a residency. And I know that a lot of people have come to every night. What's it been like, I guess, going on that journey with the crowd?
Well, the three-night event is really interesting for me, because the first night is my kind of standard touring set, which is what I'll be playing in Auckland when I come up for one show. The second night is a selection of songs from my first three records. So that's the orange one, the green one, and the blue one. And then the third night is a selection of songs from my second three albums. So that'll be the yellow one, the black one, and the baby poo coloured one. So that whole process allows me to kind of get out of my comfort zone, which is where I am when I'm playing my standard set, because I know, you know, how it fits together as a narrative, and kind of try and re-explore those songs and make them connect with what's going on today, because obviously some of them were written, you know, nearly 40 years ago. So it's an interesting challenge, and it's two different sets as well, because the first three albums, the second night, is mostly in the style of what we refer to as chop and clang, which is a reference to my guitar style from that period. So it's quite up-tempo, quite in your face. But the last night, the second three album, the tranche of albums, it's a lot more ballad-heavy. So it's a kind of slow, it's more like a singer-songwriter gig. So that contrast alone is really interesting for me. But the most important thing, Rachel, is that it allows me to sleep in the same bed for five nights.
Which is a dream.
And, oh, after you've been touring as long as I have, my New Zealand tour manager is used to flying and playing every day. He's kind of like, doesn't know what to do with his time. You know, he's kind of, what we're going to do tomorrow? I don't know. What are you doing? I'm writing a book. What are you going to do? So it's kind of, it's a much better way to tour. And you get a chance to engage with the places that you visit.
And you have certainly been doing that. It was very, very heartening to see you standing in solidarity with the workers who've been recently mass publicly fired from Calendar Girls in Wellington. It's been quite the I can't think of the right word, hoopla online from a lot of the same bloody people that will always push back when you support sex worker rights. What for you is important about standing in solidarity with those workers?
Well, first of all, cut my teeth in trade unions supporting the rights of coal miners. I wouldn't go down a coal mine myself, and I don't necessarily think producing coal is particularly good for the environment, but I do believe that people in a working situation should have rights, and that applies to everyone, sex workers included. So, the fact that someone came to the show and mentioned that this was happening after the show, and I was able to go down there. I mean, it's fortunate that I was happy to be in town on that night and was able to go along. But the opportunity to do that, to me, is as important as what I was doing the week before in England, which was supporting the nurses, and before that, supporting the teachers, who were both on strike in England. Although I will say that they didn't have any pole dancing on their picket line, but hey, that didn't mean that the Canada Girls protest didn't deserve my support. And with regard to the pushback, all I can say to those people is this is what solidarity looks like. Mm. If you're going to stand up for the people of workers' rights, then you can't afford to pick and choose. Workers either have rights or they don't have rights. Mm. And one of the things that disappointed me with some of the criticism was that they were morally judging the women and casting a very negative shade on them to suggest they were all, let me just say fallen women, for want of a better way. I don't want to run through the litany of accusations thrown at them. But the woman who had the photograph taken with the pictures, studying for a PhD, they're mostly college girls who are going through a time where they're doing a bit of money, and that's what they're doing. And I think they have 100% right to do that. And, as I said, this is what solidarity looks like.
Absolutely. I think also it seems to me like it's almost, and I don't want to make it as binary as it's an arbitrary generational thing, but there does seem to be a very particular type of conversation when it comes to sex worker rights, when it comes to bodily autonomy, and when it comes to trans and LGBTQIA plus rights, where there is a definite shift in the way certain generation is talking about it versus perhaps an older generation who in another space would have perhaps been a natural ally. And you've been, I think, an amazing bridge for a lot of people, Billy, by vocally supporting trans people, by incorporating it into your music and standing in solidarity. And that's another thing that I've seen a lot of vitriol online, and I know it's been very heartening for a lot of people to have you as an ally in that fight. But what would you say to those people who just kind of aren't up with it yet?
Well, for people of my generation, I mean, why am I interested in the trans issue? Because I was interested in gay rights and lesbian rights back in the 1970s and 1980s. Mm. You know, the first time I saw any out gay men was at Rock Against Racism, when Tom Robinson sang Sing If You're Glad to Be Gay in Victoria Park in 1978. A lot of the guys standing around me began kissing each other and cheering. And I didn't realise that me and my friends had marched in front of this banner that said Gays Against the Nazis. And this was there they were. So I was like, okay, so this isn't just about black people, it's about discrimination of all kinds. Mm. It was a real, those gay men really opened my mind as much as anything else I saw that day. And now, you know, supporting them and lesbians during the 1980s, where the Conservative government were attacking them and making it illegal to talk about gay and lesbian lifestyles in schools and marginalising them. The language that the Tories and the right-wing press used against the gays and lesbians, particularly gay men, in the 1980s, implying that they were all paedophiles, which is disgusting to do that to someone. It's exactly the same language that's now been used against the transgender community, mm-hmm. almost to the word. And I can't understand how anyone of my generation who lived through that period, who was a radical in that period, mm. who marched with the gays, who went to see the Pride movie about gays and the minors and cheered and cried at the end like everyone else does, can't understand how this is the same stuff on a different day, mm-hmm. and that the transgender community are now the focus of so much of that prejudice. And it's a real heartbreak that some of it is coming from radical feminists who we stood with in those days, who we stood with at Greenham Common. It really is sad to see that, because I think they have dug themselves a hole in which they are not able to see beyond their limited perspective of bodily autonomy, you know, because you can see it already happening in the United States of America. The people who are against in trans rights in the US are also the people who are against the right to abortion mm. on demand in America. And then why they can't make this connection, I don't know. But they've kind of like, as I say, they've dug themselves in a hole and they just keep digging. They just keep digging. And in many ways, they're, you know, it's because it's me standing with the strippers down in Wellington that they're having a go. If it'd been someone else, it would have just, they'd have dismissed it. But because they're focused on having a go at me, they're gonna pile on me. But you know, the thing is, you know, people have been heckling me for donkey's years, Rachel. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's uncomfortable for other people who've never been the focus of that sort of thing before, and I hate to see a pile on. I really do. But I have friends who are commentators who, when this happens, they very kindly, with the best intentions, DM me and say, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Mate, this is water off a duck's back. This is what I do. You know, I'm not. This is not something that's gonna trouble me. Mm. You know, unless they turn up at my house with pitchforks and torches, I'm gonna carry on doing this. It's how I measure whether or not I'm in the right place for saying the right thing. So, it's not. As I say, it's not nice. It's never nice to be the focus of that sort of thing. But hey, you know, I see through the hypocrisy of those people who are on one hand attacking the bodily autonomy of transgender and non-binary people, on the other hand supporting the bodily autonomy of women who deserve and demand the right to abortion on demand. They don't see that contradiction. I think anybody else, if you step back, anybody else does.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about music and activism as a pairing, because that's what you've dedicated your life to. How do you see those two things together in 2023?
Well, I think, you know, I've come to the conclusion, I do say this, that music doesn't have the ability to change the world. That's a bit of a hangover from the 1960s. But nonetheless, music does have the ability to make you believe the world can be changed. It's a good way to focus solidarity. I mean, the great power that music has is the power of empathy. That's what music is really all about. Whatever music you listen to, it's not about just politics music. It's, you know, you listen to music and you know, music can make you feel you're not alone. You're not the only person in the world to ever experience this situation, whether it's a political situation, emotional situation, you know, even if it's just dance music, it can put you in a bunch of people all dancing and getting off to the same music, and you realize you're not the only person who loves this music. That feeling of empathy is what music is all about. So if your politics happens to be based on empathy, as socialism is, then it's a bit of a no-brainer to not make that connection and realise that you can take some of that empathy and turn it into solidarity. So, you know, because solidarity is what you get when you mix empathy with activism. You get solidarity. So, you know, that's what I've tried to do over the years. It wasn't as, you know, as well thought out as I've just explained it back in the day. Because, you know, I came out of the back of punk rock, so that sort of like fiery anger in music was natural, because music was the only social medium available to us. That was how we spoke to one another. That was how we spoke to our parents' generation. You know, when I was 19 years old and wanted to my voice to be heard, the only medium available to me was to learn to play guitar, write songs and do gigs. So, you know, that's, I didn't think for a moment about the process I just explained to you. Obviously now, after all these years, and things have changed, and music is no longer as a vanguard role in youth culture, but it doesn't mean it can't have an effect. It doesn't mean it can't be that place where, you know, where you come along, as someone tweeted from the first Wellington show, as a trans person, how moved they were to hear an audience responding positively to what I was saying about the rights of the trans and non-binary communities to live their own lives in the way they choose. So that, you know, that's what I'm trying to generate at my gigs. You know, I come off stage with my activism recharged because the way my audience has reacted to the things I've said, and I want them to go home with that same feeling.
I was going to ask you about that, how you recharge your activism, because, I mean, it's a long fight. In New Zealand, a really incredible thinker and advocate for Indigenous sovereignty, Ranganui Walker, said ka whawhai tonu mātou, which means the struggle never ends, and that is a big call to action in activism in New Zealand. And I think often about that, particularly for people of my generation, to prevent burnout, because that's a real thing, particularly given the extremely intense years we've all just lived through. And, you know, we're going through some crazy natural disasters here in New Zealand. How would you advise people to keep up the fight, keep up the strength?
Well, I think you have to sort of like be aware that cynicism is the enemy of all of us who want to make the world a better place. And that's both the cynicism of the likes of Rupert Murdoch, who wants to make you believe that no one else cares about this stuff and that nothing will ever change, but also your own cynicism. You've got to keep your own cynicism in check. You've got to work hard on that. You've got to be able to see the glasses half full. You know, it's hard. And now you find ways to recharge it. And as I say, I'm in a privileged position, because when I feel cynical about something, I write a song about it, go out on stage, sing it, everyone cheers, and I don't feel half so bad about it. Now, you might find that, you know, hanging out with your friends or going on a march or going to a gig or making something creative that you put everything into different ways. But the thing is, Rachel, every generation has to work out how to deal with the blues. It doesn't matter what the previous generation, as we see with trans rights, you know. You think that having the progress we've made in terms of the rights of the gay and lesbian community, that the transgender movement would have a relatively straightforward, if not smooth, path to inclusivity, but that's not the case. The very same people that we fought alongside are putting roadblocks up to that. So your generation has to work out how to deal with that, and my generation have a choice of either, you know, being complacent and not joining in, or doing what they can to be an ally, not just to the transgender community, but to you as well, and your struggle. And we have it, our experience, and we can share that experience with you as, you know, as elders, but ultimately you're the people who've got to go out there and make a difference to your generation and pass it on. So it never ends. The quote that you gave, it's, you know, it's probably the most common slogan in political movements, La lucha continua, struggle continues, and it always will. There'll never be, you know, there'll never be a time when you know, we've completely got rid of racism, we've completely got rid of sexism, we've completely got rid of, you know, the barriers that stop people realising their full potential. So we have to keep on struggling, and new ideas come along, new people come along. But broadly speaking, the arc of history is long, but it does bend towards inclusivity. You've got to be able to see that things do get better. You know, if we went back to the 1970s, you know, the derogatory things that were said every week on TV comedy programs about women, people of colour, gays, lesbians, you know, they were the butt of jokes in a way that would no longer be possible now. And when people do use them as the butt of jokes, they get called out and they're whinging about cancel culture. Cancel culture is nothing more than accountability. And again, you know, left-wing politics has always been about holding people in power to account. That just doesn't mean politicians, that means people who punch down in their humour as well. They've got power and they have to be able to account for the way they use that power. We all of us have to be more responsible in the way that we make our statements in the world. There's power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union. Now the lesson we must pay for, from the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. War has always been the bosses' wise. Just
not organise. And the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us. Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, a light to the child. There is power.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.